This week, we play some touch football, rob a few banks, and use a science oven with metal for the first time. He is the Daryl Hall to my John Oates, and we are two real reviewers. I love it. I love it, Ron. Daryl Hall to my Oates. I love it. Notice right. I gave you Daryl Hall, and I'm the Oates guy.
All right.
The guy with the mustache.
You know, it's speaking of Daryl Hall and Hall Oates, I watch religiously the Goldbergs because, like, I think I've mentioned it a few times on the podcast. They did an episode of where it was Daryl Hall and Hall Oates, and they were trying to do the brothers were going to do it, and they both came out as Hall.
Because nobody wants to grow a mustache like Oates. Well, nobody can. Probably no one grow a mustache like Oates.
I forget. I flipped that. Actually, they came out as Oates, and they had the curly. He had the curly hair and the mustache.
Oh, yes. He had the curly hair.
So they both had that.
They came out as Oates. Impressive.
And they both just kept singing the same line he sings, so no one else liked anything else. So it was just like, oh, here she comes. Something like that. I can't remember what it was.
Sounds like Maneater.
Yeah, probably. So great TV show. If anybody out there watch the Goldbergs, it'll bring back all your 80s fun. So,
well, we welcome you all in, and it was a Bradley Cooper week for two real reviewers, courtesy of Mrs. Crawford.
You know, I thought that if we were going to do something like this, like she suggested Bradley Cooper because she's got the hots for him, you know, I thought maybe, you know, we'd watch these movies together and it, you know, it would, I don't know, warm up the engine, I guess. But and so maybe I shouldn't be putting that on the podcast. I don't know if she's going to listen. She actually probably will this time because I told her about the headset, and hopefully we sound better coming around this time around. So
you sound great on this end. So as we continue to make strides in production perfection on Two Real Reviewers, hopefully we're coming through to everyone loud and clear on our various social media platforms and podcast venues, starting with our good friends at Anchor.
Yep. And then we were going to have a call-in guest, but we'll have that next week. So we'll have our first call-in guest, which is our top fan on our social media sites. But so we're back at it. Bradley Cooper week. How'd you handle the week?
I was pleasantly surprised at collectively how all three of these movies were great to watch. Mm-hmm. This was probably, I think, in my opinion, the week where three quality movies were put together for us to review. Now, it just so happens by coincidence that Bradley Cooper was in all of them. I'm not sure that that's the common denominator, but as we go through our comments, I had to go back and change my rating on a couple of these because I was comparing them and giving a couple of them the same grade. And then I didn't think that was fair and downgraded a couple of them. And for our new listeners, you should understand that our rating system for Two Real Reviewers are movie treats. So you're going to hear Monty talk about how many popcorns he's going to issue to a movie. And I'm going to tell you how many red vines I'm going to give to a movie throughout the course. We don't rate on stars or diamonds. Mm-hmm. It's all about the junk food for us.
Well, and I love how we have evolved that a little bit. So we're going to have to evolve your red vines a little. I think we're going to need to throw in because they have great flavored red vines. Did you know that?
I did. And I've tried them. And maybe I can incorporate that. I can probably also incorporate black licorice into this discussion during some weeks. But I don't think that would be pertinent this week. And it's interesting that you talk about evolving because what we see with these three movies is the evolution of Bradley Cooper as an actor in picking these three flicks. The first one we're going to start with is a movie that Bradley Cooper was almost introduced to us.
Right.
Although he had done a couple of movies beforehand, but we'll start with Wedding Crashers, and Mr. Crawford is going to take us through that movie first.
Yeah, we picked this one because it was sort of the one that showed him come out onto the scene. And, you know, we all know that Owen Wilson and Vince Vaughn carried the movie, but it had some great supporting actors in there. Christopher Walken, Fisher, you know, go on and on and on. But he came out of nowhere in this movie. And from the minute he was introduced at the wedding, you hated the guy. I mean, you absolutely hated Bradley Cooper in this. So when he's in this wedding and she's been talking to Owen Wilson the whole time, and then, you know, he walks on, sorry, I'm late, you know, I'm here. And she's like, oh, this is my friend Ryan. You know, and he's like, yeah, nice to meet you. Shakes hands, walked away. So he was Sack Lodge, also known as the Big Sack, and he played his role perfectly. And I really believe that this is what made everybody start going, Bradley Cooper can do this. And he has become an excellent, you know, Hall of Fame actor, if we want to go in that terminology. But through this movie, his character evolved more and more from the throwing up scene at the table to the best part of the whole movie was the football. And he's like just killing Vince Vaughn, tackling him, and, you know, oh, sorry, you know, I just get red, you know, just, you know, all these things. Even to the point where after he threw up and the family went on the sailboat ride, when they came back from the sailboat, he's on the dock with the shotgun in his hand, and he's just pumped out of his gourd, time to go quail hunt. He's like, woo, and he's cocking the shotgun. Let's go. And she's like, honey, aren't you not feeling well? He's like, I'm fine. So, I mean, he was just – you just hated the guy so much, and it came through the screen perfectly the way he did it. And so if we're rating Bradley Cooper, I have a rating for him. If we're rating the movie, I have a rating for that one as well. So
yeah, I think we can absolutely do that. I thought there was a good smattering of talent in this movie, and a pretty decent storyline too. I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility to have a couple of legal beagles purposefully attempting to crash weddings and trying to get ahead and meet some young ladies and have some fun and come up with these rather elaborate stories. But it's obvious that the Vince Vaughn character and the Owen Wilson character, they both meet their match when they're up against Christopher Walken.
Right.
Who plays a very Christopher Walken type role, right?
Right.
And this character that has such an impact in the middle of the movie, right? With Bradley Cooper's. The guy was a dick, and an elitist male chauvinist, and I think he made this impact because I wanted to reach through my television screen and I wanted to kick his butt. And I think what they were able to do, whether it was acting or whether this just sort of happened by virtue of the two actors, I didn't think that there was any chemistry whatsoever between Bradley Cooper and Rachel McAdams.
Right.
And that was kind of the point at the end. And editorial comment here, we spoil endings in movies for those of you who have not listened to our podcast before. So when we tell you that, you know, Owen Wilson gets the girl ultimately, right? Don't say we didn't warn you. I really wrestled with, and I've come to the conclusion that this was Bradley Cooper's breakout role.
Yes.
I mean, he'd done some things beforehand. I think Wet Hot American Summer was probably the first movie that he's credited with, but this one really kind of put him on the map. What do you think?
Well, absolutely. And you go back, I mean, Wedding Crashers came out. What was this? Oh my goodness. Hold on.
2005.
Is it? Yeah, it was earlier film, 2005. And then Hangover came out in 2009, and he, you know, Bradley Cooper started evolving there as well. I mean, he was really good in that movie. Again, playing a friend, but at the same time, you know, he had a little bit of a jerk side to him. You see him stealing the money from the kids at the school to go to Vegas, you know.
Right.
So the problem back with the movie Wedding Crashers that I have is, and I sometimes I like him and sometimes I don't, but Vince Vaughn can drive me crazy just with the nonstop talking, you know. And it's like in the opening scene where they're with the working with Rebecca De Mornay and the other actor on there was the singer. What's his name? Oh gosh. And he was in Four Christmases with him too. Who was Rebecca De Mornay divorcing in the movie in the beginning? We all know him. Former country western singer. And Dwight Yoakam.
Dwight Yoakam. Yes.
Dwight Yoakam at the end, and they're sitting, you know, and they're going through this whole thing, and Vince Vaughn won't stop talking. And he's like, and if you guys want to start throwing some airline miles our way, and the guy's like, whatever, just shut up. And that's kind of like how you want to look at Vince Vaughn and say, yeah, this is, I'm done. I have a
bad habit when we're on of talking about what I don't like, right? Mm-hmm. And this episode was supposed to be devoted to our analysis of Bradley Cooper, but since you opened that door, I'm going to walk through it, because with the exception of a couple of movies, mm-hmm. Vince Vaughn gets under my skin.
Yep.
And he did in this movie as well. Mm-hmm. I think Dodgeball is probably the one exception that I'll make, because I really love that movie. I shouldn't, but I really do.
Nobody makes me bleed my own blood. Nobody.
The Ocho. He tends to play the same character,
right?
The snarky guy. I mean, and so since you brought it up, I'm going to echo your sentiments, because I feel the exact same way. What do you think about the rumors that they're going to make a sequel to this movie?
I think this is a movie that you don't do that to. We've talked about sequels in the past, and Wedding Crashers is absolutely one that it holds it on its own. It had, you know, outside of Vince Vaughn, I think Owen Wilson played a great part. Vince Vaughn had some good runs in there. Like, the one of the funniest parts in this whole movie was when, you know, you got to remember when he was tied to the bed, and then the weird brother came in and shoved a sock in his mouth. And, you know, and so when he comes downstairs the next morning and Owen Wilson's like, you know, he didn't sleep well. He goes, with soft mattress? He goes, no, I didn't. Vince Vaughn goes, I didn't sleep well. And he goes, soft mattress? And he goes, soft mattress, maybe the midnight rape, I don't know, the nude gate art show. You know, and he just goes on and on and on. Those types of scenes with him, I like. I can handle him there.
He gets on a soapbox and he's lecturing and he's talking down to people, and that's the part of it that I just don't care for.
Right. The movie itself is fun. I do believe it's a little long. I know it's an hour and almost 2 hours. I believe they could have wrapped this up a little bit sooner. I think there were scenes in there that didn't need to be in there. And I'm going to say this is one movie I believe Will Ferrell did not need to be in. I think just knowing about his character, I don't, the whole funeral thing, and I get it, it ties in, but I felt that they could have found a different way to do that. I think there was the 15 minutes that it didn't need to be in this film. You were already heading down that road. You all knew he was going to go get her back. It could have been done differently. And I love Will Ferrell. I just don't think if you were going to put him in there, it needed to be in a bigger role than that. You know,
and have more exposure. I mean, if Chaz Reinhold was really going to invite the boys over to have meatloaf with his mother, it should have happened earlier in the movie.
Ma, meatloaf, meatloaf, ma. Here's how I would have wrote this. I would have taken that part, because they used it to introduce you to who Chaz was. You know, who they've been listening to all the rules with. I would have moved it in front, removed the Rebecca De Mornay and Dwight Yoakam scene, and moved that up front and found a way to introduce him through how he got all the information from the beginning. Then they talk about their wedding crashing season. So anyways, that's just how I would, it dragged a little bit for me to the point where, okay, I've seen this. Where's the fast forward button? Let me get to the one part we're all here for, and that's seeing our good friend and favorite actor Bradley Cooper get just cold cocked by Vince Vaughn at the end of that movie. That was absolutely the best part of it. So for me, there's a lot of little trivias and stuff like that in here as well that I would love to share. But, you know, it, for instance, I don't know if you knew this, Todd, who painted the picture of Vince Vaughn naked on the tree, Vince Vaughn actually kept that painting. I was reading about this and he kept it. And there's some really cool things in the trivia section of IMDb that you, I love to read about. And, you know, there was a lot of stuff that, that they did and they're, you know, we can do connect the dots and stuff like that with them. But I'm going to go, I was going for this movie, it hit in the middle of the road for me because of Vince Vaughn's two-sided characters. Bradley Cooper, I give a 4 because he made you want to punch him, like we said, and he did his job better than, you know, we ever thought that that role could have been done. And then 3 for the movie itself. So
it's amazing that you and I are friends because I'm right there with you. If I'm if I'm giving out individual red vines to Bradley Cooper, I'm giving him 4, and I'm giving the movie itself a 3. It's a fun movie to watch. It has some yucks in it. The character that Bradley Cooper played was one that really had an impact, and I think he gets a little bit more acting accolades than the others, but there are some problems with the movie that make it an average watch. And I agree with you too. I would hope that they don't make some sort of a sequel, because I'm just afraid that they would goof it up, or they would go back to it. This would be something that Will Ferrell would do, and maybe it's a prequel and the Chaz character starts at the very beginning, and I don't need that.
Did you put down in your notes that I need to talk? I know you've put down the notes about American Hustle, that we have some conversation time in there for two ladies. But yes. In here you have Rachel Giant Forehead McAdams, and then you have the beautiful Isla Fisher. If you have to choose, Ron, who do you take?
Rachel McAdams.
Really?
Oh, yes. Oh, you know who, hands down.
You know who I'm taking out of all this? Jane Seymour. Hell yes. Kitty liked to scratch that cougar, man. Woo! Jane Seymour, I've always, back to, what was it, Dr. Quinn, Medicine Woman?
Yes.
She in this movie played that. I loved her role in this movie. And just, you know, the only thing that upsets me, and honey, I know when you listen to this, I'm going to apologize now. But in the beginning of the movie where they're dancing and their wedding season's coming down and they have that little montage of all the girls they're sleeping with and they're getting laid out on the bed and there's basically topless women through probably about 10 scenes. You have this movie with all these boobs in there and you get us so close to seeing Jane Seymour's and you don't really show them. That was what bothered me. I think that's why I rated the movie a 3.
And not to mention that she wanted everybody to see him.
Right.
And in the case of the Owen Wilson character, she wanted him to touch them.
Which he did. So that's David Domkin's way of, what do they call that when you in a sales pitch, you advertise one thing and then pull it out from underneath them and you sell them something else.
The switcheroo?
The bait and switch. So Jane Seymour, we were baited and switched. But
Well, we should have talked before we went on, because I think that this justifies having a Jane Seymour weekend of movies.
Ooh, I could do that. I like Jane. I think she's beautiful. She did a little skit part on How I Met Your Mother where she played a cougar with Barty Stinson. And was dressed to the nines, and she looked really hot in that. But yeah, she's one of those.
Yeah, honorable mention to her in this movie, playing, you know, Christopher Walken's wife. I mean, there's no. I mean, I don't even remember any dialogue between them. No. They're husband and wife, and I don't even remember them talking to one another at any point in the movie at all.
No, I don't either. Actually, I don't. Yeah. So, well, that heads us out into a place beyond the pines, and this was your pick, so lead us in, tell us what you felt about this one.
So 2005 is Wedding Crashers, and 7 years later you have Bradley Cooper in a movie that was directed by Derek Cianfrance, mm-hmm. Who's a friend of Ryan Gosling from their days of Blue Valentine. Now, as I started to watch this movie, I thought this was going to be similar to what we saw in Wedding Crashers, is that Bradley Cooper was going to have some sort of bit role, because it looks like it's going to be a Ryan Gosling flick from the very beginning. The film also features Eva Mendes, Mahershala Ali, and good old Ray Liotta as a bad cop. Have we seen this somewhere before?
God, he's played it in everything he does. He plays them. Even in Date Night, he was a mafia guy. He plays those bad roles perfect. So, I love Ray,
so well. Ray Liotta. I love Ray Liotta as well. So. The movie has three storylines intertwined into it. And it starts with Ryan Gosling's character, Luke, discovering that he fathered his son with Eva Mendes the summer before. She didn't tell him about it. And she is now living with another man, Mahershala Ali.
Right.
Luke decides that he wants to try and provide for his son, because he's a carnival performer on a motorcycle. And that doesn't necessarily pay the rent all that well, let alone buy some diapers. So he befriends a gentleman named Robin, who had a previous life of robbing banks. And Luke and Robin rob some banks. It gives Luke the opportunity to give the baby mama some money. And she does her very best to not let Luke get back in her life. But the fact that they have a child together means that they have that sort of permanent connection. Eventually, Robin doesn't want to rob banks anymore. But Luke, on the thrill of it all and getting the money, decides to go it alone. And on his first attempt at a solo bank robbery, it gets completely botched, and he gets holed up in a house, and in hot pursuit is a police officer named Avery Cross, played by Bradley Cooper.
Yep.
So this is where the second storyline kind of kicks in, because Avery Cross ends up confronting Luke in a shootout, and Luke gets killed. And Avery becomes part of a group of dirty cops led by Ray Liotta. Avery turns them in, the dirty cops, after being labeled a hero with the Luke incident, and is always looking over his shoulder. The squeaky clean image of Avery allows him to run for attorney general 15 years after the incident with Luke that made him a hero. And this is where the third section of the film kicks in. 15 years later, the miraculous and ironic friendship that develops between Avery's son and Luke's son, who was a baby when his father, his natural father, was killed. The two young boys, unaware that there's history between their two fathers, have a very dark relationship as schoolmates, until Jason, that's Avery's son, Luke's son, tries to kill AJ after being manipulated by him one too many times. Avery ends up letting Jason off the hook after he discovers that Jason is Luke's son, and Jason makes a run for a new life. The conclusion of the movie is Avery winning the election for attorney general with his son by his side.
Right.
What I like probably the most in this movie is the fact that they were able to start a story, end it. It picks up on the tail of that story. They end that storyline, and then they pick up the third. And it concludes, and they're all buttoned up really well together. Mm-hmm. The fact that Cooper plays a wholesome good guy with a conscience, the fact that he's troubled and he's tormented, especially because he's a young cop when he has this incident with Luke. Mm-hmm. He has trouble being a single father. It's obvious that he, 15 years later, when his own son is trying to live with him, that he's a single dad, right, and he's struggling like some of us have done so in the past, regardless of our public image.
Right.
He's you can tell that he's an impressionable young man when he's that first time cop that gets into trouble, turns in the bad guys, is labeled a hero, and parlays that all into being a political figure.
But you got to remember, he has a little bit of a dick side to him, because he didn't parlay it. He blackmailed basically the chief or whoever that was at the part in there to get him a shot assistant DA at the time.
Right.
Yeah. And so he, even though he turned those bad guys in, the bad cops in, he also turned and played and twisted it to make himself get ahead in the game the wrong way.
Well, he got himself off the hook.
Well, yeah, but at the same time, I felt like that was sort of a dick move, but it fit what he was trying to do, you know? So, again, it made me think, I'm like, dude, you were playing this wholesome guy and you're doing all the right things, and then bam, you know, you basically break the law by blackmailing and to get the assistant DA position. So I just thought I'd throw that in there when you're talking. Sorry.
No, that's what we do. That's what we do. I found the way they put this movie together the most enjoyable part of it. I thought the Avery role for Bradley Cooper, he obviously stepped up his game if we're comparing it strictly to the first movie we saw with him in, which was Wedding Crashers. I mean, he had done some movies in between those two, of course.
Right, right.
But then, you know, the next movie, we're obviously seeing a maturation of his acting skills, because Avery is a troubled dude.
Right.
You can see it in his eyes and his body language. The scene where, you know, he's supposed to follow Ray Liotta
right
into the middle of nowhere, right? And the whole fight or flight thing ends up kicking in for him.
Yep.
One of the parts that I had a hard time really buying was that the whole connection between the boys didn't come out and essentially sabotage his election for AG, for Attorney General. I thought for sure that would have sunk his battleship. But that's the ending of the movie. If you're referring to writing things differently, I might have written something differently. And I had half a thought as Luke is riding away on his brand new motorcycle. Mm-hmm. Is this a stage or setup for some sort of sequel for Luke and AJ to go have some sort of continued role in another movie? But it hasn't happened yet. It could very well be.
Well, you know, and Dane DeHaan is the one that played the Avery, the younger son. I mean, AJ. And Emery Cohen played the other son. And those two, just, you know, they're playing 16-year-old kids and in high school, and they're 22 and 25 years old, which is not uncommon nowadays, but they both still played the role very well. I did not like the way that the troubled teen was, not AJ, but the one played by Emery Cohen. And I didn't like how he played his role, and it kind of bothered me a little bit. The cocky, wanting to be a hip hop rapper type guy, it just didn't fit for me, for him. I think you could have been, something different, enacted different. I didn't like that. I thought that was, not to sound political with all the things going on right now, but I do believe that how he played it was very racist, and I didn't like that part. I just didn't. It bothered me.
I thought what also got missed in the third story, if you want to call it the third storyline, is what ultimately happened to that family unit. Because at the very beginning, when we meet Avery, the cops show up at his house, they have dinner with him and his wife, and AJ, you know, is a baby at this point in time. And he was married, but you never find out why he wasn't married anymore. You know, Avery lives in this big house, and the son wants to move in, being a typical 16-year-old kid that would rather live with dad as opposed to mom. But they really don't explain what went wrong. The assumption is that she nagged him to death because she did that at the very in the scene at the dinner table where Ray Liotta was there, right? That's your assumption, but there could have been. I think that could have been developed a little bit better.
Yeah, the film is one of those very, I don't want to say artsy type of film, very low soundtrack to it. So there wasn't a lot of hoo-ha to it. It was just acting. Three stories acting. There was not a lot of craziness to it. The special effects on it was very minimal. I mean, it was just the cars crashing and the stunt driving on the motorcycle. Did you know that Rick Miller had to teach Ryan Gosling how to ride a motorcycle through this the way that he did? And just so everybody knows who Rick Miller is, he's the one that always rides the bat cycle in all the Batman movies. That's him, not Christian Bale. And then did you talk about Hall & Oates because of the song that was in there?
Of course.
That was like the only real part of the soundtrack that they had in this movie. And that was, they had Maneater and they even referenced Hall & Oates in the movie. So I figured you had a connection in there.
One of the scenes when Robin is letting Luke live in the trailer.
Right.
And they're talking about robbing the banks. Robin makes the reference about them being Hall & Oates.
Yeah. Not since Hall & Oates has there been such a team. Jesus. Oh, right. The good old Hall & Oates. So would you give your movie? What's your
So I had to revise my rating on this movie, and this one got 3.5 red vines for the movie. Cooper gets another four red vines for acting. And originally I had this movie notched at 4 and 4. 4 is the movie. And then for Bradley Cooper's acting ability and the role he played in this. Mm-hmm. But as we get a little bit further along in this podcast, I think I should be able to explain why I downgraded this to a 3.5 movie. I don't know that there was a whole lot about the movie itself that left me just speechless,
right?
But the techniques that they used and what you referenced as well, and like I said, the fact that they had these three storylines that are related but they also stand on their own two legs,
right?
I thought was a very creative way to do a movie, and that's why I gave it a slightly above average rating.
Well, I'm going to go a different direction. I love the fact of the three stories and how they went. I thought, if you look at the technical aspect of the movie, I thought you hit it very well. It's a great film when it comes to those things, to that. I believe that Bradley Cooper played well. I think Eva Mendes played very well in this movie. And all of them did. Even Ray Liotta played his typical role well. The one character that I was sort of withdrawn from was Ryan Gosling. I like Ryan Gosling as an actor. I felt his very nonchalant, melancholy type role. Like, okay, all right. You know, the only time you ever seen him really get upset is when he hit, what's his name, with the hammer, and when he jumped into the bank robbery. Other than that, it was just sort of a ho-hum type of thing through a majority of the movie. And when that was happening, I was getting really bored with his character, which was – so the first part of that movie, I was dragging. I really was dragging with The Place Beyond the Pine. And then it picked up a little bit when Bradley Cooper came in. I'm not saying Cooper saved it. I'm just saying it picked up a little bit more. But I just kind of thought – for me, Ryan Gosling didn't play a very good role in this movie.
I think he was supposed to be this dark, troubled, you know, demonic guy,
right,
whose career ambitions were to do motorcycle tricks at carnivals mm-hmm. and travel across the country. And, you know, then he finds out that he's a father. Right. Mm-hmm. And it's as if it's no big deal.
Right.
Oh yeah. Oh, I got a kid.
Yeah. I'm going to be in his life. I'm going to get him a playpen.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm going to break into your house and put it together.
Yeah. So that to me, just his role was very, and I think that the character, if it was a little bit better developed, this movie would have done a lot better. It would have kept our, the hooks in you the whole time. And I really had to, I actually believe I dozed off a little bit, not to, you know, I hate to say that, but in a section, I kind of dotted my head because he was getting to me. But anyways, so for me, that was what it did. So on this movie, Bradley Cooper, again, for me, I think got a 4. The part that I felt he was really tortured is when he was in the woods and he had the gun to him and he just kept saying, is my son alive? You know, he was at that point, I think he realized I need to be, you know, my son could be dead. And now, so I got to be a better father if I get out of this, you know, and that he was so tortured right there and you saw it in him. So for me, I was going to go 2.5 microwave popcorns. Because the movie, anytime I doze off in a movie, I'm, you know, it is what it is. But the great thing about this is that we get to end this movie and we move on to the phenomenal film that I'm so happy that we have on here. And your wife was our tiebreaker from our fans.
I will be very appreciative that she was able to set this movie over the edge in our scientific voting, because I was gunning to watch Silver Linings Playbook as part of the movie choices that we had for Bradley Cooper, and I'm delighted that this is the one that ultimately got the nod. American Hustle. A movie from 2014 that was directed by David Russell. It reunites Christian Bale and Amy Adams, along with Bradley Cooper and Jennifer Lawrence. We will now pause briefly to listen to Monty's comments about actress Amy Adams. Monty?
I was heartbroken when I read the trivia on this, and it bothered me. They used body doubles for a lot of the other parts, and it bothered me. Amy Adams is so beautiful. She's such a beautiful woman. And the clothing that she wore in this movie was just out there. I mean, she was on show for you, and that kept me hooked to the screen the whole time. And I just absolutely love her to death. She is almost up there with Bardot. She's maybe this generation's Adrian Barbeau.
if we're talking about revising our rating system, maybe you should quit with the popcorns and give out 2 and 3 Adrian Barbeaus.
I could go like, oh, that was a 34 C cup.
Oh, boy.
But hey, we never said this wasn't, this was made for children.
No, we don't have a PG or a G rating, that's for sure.
Well, you text me and you were like, you got to give me time for Lawrence. And I'm like,
Jennifer Lawrence doesn't use body doubles, my friend.
Okay. So we're going to have this conversation about her because she did a great job acting. I thought she was too young to play the part. If you look at her character compared to everybody else, she looks like she is 10 years younger than everybody else, if not.
She really does. I mean, if we're going to have I guess this simply endorses having an Amy Adams movie previewing weekend next weekend, and then we'll do Jennifer Lawrence the weekend after that. I agree with you. As far as roles are concerned, this one wasn't all that fantastic for her. And you're right. She looked like she was in junior high school.
Right. Right. And I tried to say that to my wife, and she's like, no, you have to understand, she's a single mom. He's saving her, Christian Bale. And so to me, I'm like, even though you put it that way, to me, she still looks too young. Like, she's dolled up. Like, she's like one of the girls that I ever, you know, coached softball with, she would look like if they got dressed up for the prom. It's like, you can't, you're not supposed to look that old. Look your age. You know,
well, and
she
and,
looked like she was 15, 16 years old.
And you're putting,
with makeup.
And you're putting her next to the Irving character, who spent the first 28 minutes of the movie trying to comb over his hair.
That was excellent. I love it.
Wasn't that a great way to start a movie?
How about the scene where Bradley Cooper messes up his hair and Christian Bale never moved? He just never moved.
And Amy Adams is going, don't do that. He doesn't like that.
I kept thinking to myself, the old, you won't like me when I'm angry.
It was the same decade. It was the 70s. You wouldn't like me when I get angry.
Now, with that being said, on American Hustle, did they or did they not, from cast perspective of a set design to wardrobe, they nailed the era. They nailed it. Even the microwave, clunky sucker.
It's not a microwave. It's a science oven.
It's a science
oven. That's where Jennifer Lawrence's character keeps referring to it as, is the science oven.
And again, you talk about a cast of stars. I mean, Christian Bale, who played just an amazing, that guy can do so many transformations. That was not a fake belly. Did you know that he gained weight to play that role?
Which played that role then. There's hope for me yet.
He's one of those guys. Excuse me, I'm losing my voice here. He's one of those guys that will do a big transformation for a role, like the mechanic he did. He did it for the one where he was in the Vietnam prison. He did it for Vice, which it was, or Dick. What is that where he's playing Dick Cheney?
Yeah.
Is it Dick or Vice? I can't remember.
When he plays it, it's not Dick.
Okay, so it's Vice.
We may not be PG, but it's not that kind of podcast, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, he's done these transformations. And, I mean, Christian Bale is, like, just amazing. You know, we've heard the stories of him snapping on set and stuff like that. But he played this role. And I'm pretty sure you know this is based on a true story.
Correct.
Yeah, the ab scams. Bradley Cooper week, so we'll bring Bradley Cooper's name back into this with his tight Jerry curl that he had,
or his curlers in his hair.
What was that, the Brady Bunch curl? What was Greg?
Robert Reed.
Robert Reed
and Greg Brady.
Yep.
You know, Mr. Brady and Greg Brady both had that that kinky perm.
They had the one scene with the rolls, the curling rolls, made me laugh. Did you know that he actually told the director he wants to have that type of hair through the movie? Like, that was his idea.
It's just one more component to what you said earlier about them being they nailed that era.
Right.
The clothes, the science oven, the kinky perms,
the cars.
Yeah, I mean, and let's see. Did I mention anything about the soundtrack yet?
Not yet, but Amy Adams' breasts, they nailed that as well. I'm just been...
Those are big in the 70s, weren't they?
The scene where they're dancing at the disco and they go into the bathroom and he just like walks her past everybody in line and goes right into the stall with her. And I'm thinking, I've seen this movie before, but I don't remember them doing anything in there. And then it's like, oh, they don't. She always said no, supposedly.
Right. You know? Right.
So I'm like, oh man. But Bradley Cooper ends up playing a jerk.
Well, he
got too egotistical.
He tastes success.
Mm-hmm.
He's this close to being on page one, right, on the New York Times, and he's a very trusting fellow who has a fiance and lives with his mother, you know, another mom meet.
Right. Meatloaf, ma.
And he just becomes enamored with Sydney, who's played by Amy Adams. Even the guy's name, Richie DeMaso, right? Yeah. He goes from being, a stooge in the FBI and his boss is Louis C.K. Now, I know that Louis C.K. has been in purgatory for the last few years, but I loved him in this movie, playing the career FBI supervisor that just wants to get out of there and wants to retire. And here's this young pup, Richie DeMaso, that makes all of these outlandish requests and demands for hotel suites and
right.
Lear jets and all this stuff because Richie DeMaso is this close, to not only, infiltrate the mob, but he's going to end up getting the politicians as well. Two superior roles, one uncredited with Robert De Niro being right. the Miami, mafia boss.
Right.
And as much as we're supposed to talk about Bradley Cooper and the Richie DeMaso character, I can't continue to talk about him without telling you how much I enjoyed Jeremy Renner playing Mayor Carmine Polito.
Now, didn't you feel sorry for him at the end?
I did. I felt bad for him, and I felt bad for Irving because Irving
were friends.
He couldn't go through with it, and he tried to save his friend, and he couldn't, and they all went down. It all went downhill, unfortunately. Mm. But the Richie DeMaso character goes from insignificant FBI guy, busting Irving and Sidney, to making a name for himself.
Right.
And then it all crashes and burns.
Yep. And that's what happens when you can't stay, within yourself, and you get that ego. And that's what happens. That rug got pulled out from him. And to know that that's a true story, I read through, there's a great website for all of you that if you want to go history versus Hollywood, it's actually called History versus Hollywood. American Hustle will put them pictures side by side. They actually look a lot alike. The actors portrayed each other very well for most part. But a lot of that stuff that went on it's amazing to see how what really happened. And it started off as something very small. They just wanted to bust a few scammers, and it evolved. And it became where they were going after the crooked politicians and cops and everything like that. But again, Bradley Cooper, again, I go back to it. He plays that. I mean, don't get me wrong. There's other movies where he's done some amazing stuff. American Sniper, where he played a good guy. The Star Is Born, where he, you felt bad for him in that, but he was such an amazing movie. And I was hoping that one would have won our poll, but because there's so much to say about that. But in this movie, again, at the end, when they get the big bust when they get close to the end of the movie, they get the big bust, and he comes in and he's high-fiving everybody and the FBI agent out of the office. And then he's sitting down making fun of Louis C.K., who storms out of the office, and he's acting like him and mimicking him that he's a sourpuss. And you know what I mean? And it just like your ego's getting there, dude. Something's going to come crashing down on you. And sure enough, it did.
I think the character shows a wide variety of emotions and levels. He's aggressive, right? He gets physical with people.
Right.
He's enamored with Sydney. He gets, seduced. She plays him like a banjo. She absolutely plays him like a banjo. And he's intimidated.
Wouldn't you let her play you like a banjo?
Right?
She could not only could she play me like a banjo, she could have played me like any other instrument she wanted to.
And he ultimately gets completely screwed over, right. And you're almost cheering that he did. And not that it was as outlandish a role as he was in Wedding Crashers.
Right.
Because in Wedding Crashers, it came out, he was immediately an unlikable character.
Right.
When he first busts Irv and Sidney, he's a normal, ordinary, average FBI guy that's making these short run busts.
Right.
That's all it is. And then he gets a taste of it, and he thinks he's going to be a hero, and he's going to be on the evening news, and it all comes crashing down around him, and the cons end up winning. The end of the movie right. is where Irv and Sydney presumably go off to live happily ever after.
Now, does an Amy Adams that gorgeous, that beautiful, really run off with Irving? Hair comb over. I mean, she fell in love with it. She said it. She goes, in the beginning, she kind of in her, when she's telling her story in her head or, you know, to us in the dialogue, she says, to, you know, he wasn't much to look at. He's, you know, comb over and, you know, the suits. And, but she said there was just something about him.
That gut, you know, you're right. I mean, and she didn't know anything about him.
Right.
It wasn't about money. The guy owned a dry cleaners, for crying out loud.
Right.
It was only after they got to know one another that he let her in on his little secret about, right. You know, loan sharking people for $5,000 a pop.
Yep. Yep. Now, there's one character that we haven't discussed, and he held himself in this movie, and he tied it all together. And with him speaking Arabic at the end, saved, because Robert De Niro would have was speaking Arabic, as you remember, is our great friend from... oh my gosh, what's the movie? What's the super Ant-Man? Michael Pena.
Michael Pena.
Playing the Sheik
and saves the day. Now, the Hispanic Sheik.
That's the one part. I was like, he comes walking out. I looked at Angela and I go, is that Michael Pena? He's supposed to be a Sheik. He can't look like he's, you know. It looks like him. He can't. That's not a Sheik. They could have done better. You know, not putting Michael Pena down. I just thought, as the FBI back then, if that's truly what it was. But he saved their butts by, you know, all of a sudden when Robert De Niro starts speaking to him, and I think, believe it was Arabic, and he started talking back to him that way. And we were all thinking, you know, if for the first time you saw that movie, like, oh shit, you know, they're all getting busted right here. And they get lucky. And like I said, it was a great, great movie. I think they did a great job in this movie. I could watch it again, just and not just because of Amy Adams.
So the fact that the Hispanic Sheik wore those, you know, those thick horn-rimmed glasses.
Right.
He's not believable at all. And then he takes that to another level when they're at the table negotiating with Robert De Niro, and he didn't say anything, and you're just waiting for it to go south on everybody. Mm-hmm. And as you said, he ends up saving the day. It was just one more character. I agree with you. This was, I had forgotten what a great movie this is.
Right.
And if you do any research on this movie at all, and I in particular this time around was on Wikipedia for a lot of this, for a lot of information about this movie. This movie is in numerous movie critics' top 10 lists
right.
of all time, right? Which I think is something that you and I are going to have to do at some point in time as well, is put a top 10 list together of our movies, and we go from there. But, I mean, there's a countless list of movie reviewers, not affiliated with Two Real Reviewers, that
right.
rank this movie extremely high. And I know why now. And it was after, I think I saw this movie during awards season. So it had been a while since I had watched it.
Well,
I had just forgotten how good it is.
So speaking that, you brought up awards season, your Oscar week that you always do. Love it. Think it's great.
Thank
It'll
you.
Definitely be highlighted on our podcast next season when it comes through. It was nominated for how many? 10 Academy Awards.
10 Academy Awards.
How many did it win?
I believe it won zero.
Zero, yep. This one and The Irishman are known for the most Oscar nominations to and not to win any. And that absolutely blows my mind, because even though I thought she played it too young, you know, Jennifer Lawrence played a phenomenal role. Bradley Cooper played a phenomenal role. Amy Adams, Christian Bale. I mean, if anybody should have walked away with something, it should have been Christian Bale. In my mind, I thought you saw him go through finding love to wanting to be staying with Jennifer Lawrence for the kid. He kept saying, that's my son, even though it's not his. You felt that passion that he had for that, for those trying to be their savior. His tormented, even his heart conditions that he had. He was going through so much, and that was real in real life for that actor. I mean, for that that person. So Christian Bale should have won. I mean, I would have to actually try to look up and see who won that year, but I believe Christian Bale should have won it. I absolutely believe it. And I thought that back when this came out in 2014 that he should have won. So, but that's an all-star cast. Absolutely. Where's the connect? We haven't connected dots. We haven't done that yet.
What? Oh, you have one?
Well, De Niro, Coop, and Lawrence were all in another movie together.
Oh, that's right. It was the Miss Congeniality, the movie I originally wanted to win in the poll, Silver Linings Playbook.
Yes, yes. And I'm going to say I think I messed that up because Twitter doesn't allow us on the poll to put out like that for whatever reason. Wouldn't take the whole name. So I had to shorten it to Silver Lining. So maybe some people didn't get that under the Bradley Cooper week, and that's could have been my fault. But that's an excellent movie as well. So.
I had to go back and look to see what movie won that year against American Hustle, and it was 12 Years a Slave.
Okay, great.
That was what won Best Picture that year. Okay. In hindsight, being what it is, and having watched American Hustle again, I guess I'd have to go back and watch 12 Years a Slave again. But no thanks. Quite frankly, I remember it and didn't really enjoy it the first time around. And Christian Bale narrowly lost out to Matthew McConaughey in Dallas Buyers Club.
Well, is that because Matthew McConaughey, I mean, you talk about two guys that did a transformation of body size. I mean, Matthew McConaughey lost all that weight to play that role.
Right.
That's not special effects.
And Christian Bale gained it.
Gained it. Yeah. And the crazy thing about that is look at who they were up against. Bruce Dern from Nebraska, Leonardo for The Wolf of Wall Street, which was an excellent movie.
Yes.
But which we'll definitely need to do one day. But great. I mean, yeah, you can't give it up. I mean, I still believe Christian Bale should have won. But you can't give, you can't take anything away from what Matthew McConaughey
That's did. Almost a coin toss between those two, because I thought McConaughey's performance in that movie was fantastic. And Christian Bale's was as well. And you mentioned it earlier, the longstanding tradition that we have now with Christian Bale transforming himself into Irving's and Batman and Dick Cheney. I mean,
yep.
It's across the board. He's able to change gears really easily. But our comments really should be directed towards Bradley Cooper. And just to wrap up
Cooper Week.
Thoughts about Cooper Week. And in this role in particular, it just took him a few more steps away from The Place Beyond the Pines, where you saw more out of him, more depth, a wide variety of emotions for sure in this movie. And if you want to take it a step further and include a movie that we didn't review, but the last one that he got a lot of attention for, and rightfully so, was a movie that you mentioned earlier, and that was his role in A Star Is Born. I thought that this was a Four Red Vines role for him, but I thought the movie was 4.5 Red Vines. I thought the movie was better than what Bradley Cooper's role was in it, only because you had so many other actors, fine actors, that delivered fantastic performances in a well-written movie.
Well, and for me, I'm going to go with the 4 popcorns for Bradley Cooper. He 4'd across the board for me this week. And I'm going to go 4 for the movie itself. And I believe a lot has to do. I mean, like we said, the costumes, the set, I mean, the set design, it was excellent done. I recommend anybody go out and see this movie. If you haven't seen it, rent it. Pay your $3.99. A great movie to watch. You'll enjoy it from the beginning to the end.
Of all three we did this week, this was by far the best movie.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was the best movie that Bradley Cooper was in of the three.
I think it was the best of his career at that point.
at that point, for sure.
Right.
There's certainly more to come, you know, where Bradley Cooper is concerned, without question.
Right, right. So we are off to another week, and we're going to go a little different this year. I mean, this week. I've picked a unique film. And again, we're in our podcast, and just so everybody knows, Rod and I can see each other, but we only put audio up on the podcast, obviously. And we have chosen to do both of our podcasts from our bed today. I'm leaning with pillows behind my back, and I'm hiding from my kids, cause they're all downstairs being loud. So I'm upstairs in my room and on my bed. And so are you, my man. It makes me weird to announce the movie we're going to watch.
Well, the reason I got banished upstairs is, as we continue to put out quality podcasts, it's all courtesy of our wives.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we did this Bradley Cooper week out of consideration for your wife. A couple of weeks ago, I ended up sitting down and catching the Dirty Dancing movie that my wife Stacy absolutely positively adores. And I'm upstairs today because she discovered the 2017 remake of it and is glued to the television set downstairs.
So she's actually watching it right now.
She's watching it right now, and I wanted no part of it. And
isn't it like Havana Nights or something?
We are done. I mean, done with dancing movies.
Except for you turned around and watched Grease this week.
That was different. That's a sing-along.
It's not a sing-along. They dance.
It was a sing-along.
Rod, they dance. I had this argument with Angela in the car. So she's, go Grease Lightning. That was all dancing. Tell me more. Did she put up a fight? They were all dancing on the bleachers. They danced at the dance. They danced at the end.
Yeah, but Stockard Channing is in the movie, and she plays Rizzo, and you know, it's Olivia Newton-John.
Oh.
Australia's treasure.
In that black suit, the skin-tight suit. That would have been another 20-minute conversation.
We now pause for Monty's comments on Olivia Neutron Bomb.
Didn't she have – remember her singing career she had?
Yes.
Oh,
when I was a wee lad of 8-9 years old, I think was when some of her first music. She did a lot of country music.
What was the one song that after Grease she tried to mainstream in, and the whole video was her in like yoga, or, you know?
My wife likes to for years was under the impression that the song Physical.
Physical, thank you.
Was about working out in the gym. And it's not.
It's not.
It's about something else. So we're done. I mean, okay.
No more dancing.
Give me static about watching Grease last week, and I have no part of that dirty dancing. We've now taken control of our movie selections. This week's choices. Yes. Were strictly Monty's and mine.
I am going with the 2009 comedy drama mystery, an Amazon original, which is pretty unique. It is a story about Mary Beth and Priscilla Conley as they attempt to cover up a gruesome run-in with a dangerous man. So it is Blow the Man Down. So we'll see how this turns out. I've looked at it. It's directed by Bridget Savage Cole and Danielle Cruddy, who are also the writers. And if I said the name wrong, I apologize. I didn't see, like, I'm looking through the cast, and you're not having anything in here where something pops up like a Robert De Niro or Bradley Cooper. So very unknown cast. I think there's a few people I might recognize, but they're not in that top line celebrity status type thing of a blockbuster film. So, but it looked interesting during the trailer. So I'm very interested in seeing how it turns out.
And I decided to take a look at a 2015 movie that was up for Best Picture at that time, and has a tie-in to what's been happening in our country over the last couple of weeks, where race relations are concerned. Now, Monty and I don't get into political conversations And we don't necessarily endorse any particular type of political statement. However, it is a factual look at history with the March on Selma. So we are going to take a look at the 2015 movie Selma that was kind of an under-the-radar quality movie that was made back. I'm not sure it got the press that it really should have back at that point in time. But we're going to take a look at the star-studded Oprah Winfrey inclusive movie, Selma.
You know, I'm looking forward to watching this movie. And I'll tell you, being that it's the time that we are in right now, and yeah, we have said that we're not political, but I will say this, this has become more of a, this is not political, this is human rights, you know, this is humanity, and what we're doing as individuals out here is, in our social world is just ridiculous, and so I'm looking forward to watching this film and seeing this. It's one that I had seen before back in 2014, so excited to see it. Excited to see it. And now we're also got something else coming up this week.
We do. For those of you that listened in the month of May, we threw a few Mother's Day movies out to celebrate all the moms out there, including our wives, who are great moms to our kids.
Excellent.
But next Sunday is all about us dads. So we're gonna put four movies up on our Twitter poll, and you'll be able to see those on our Facebook page as well at Two Real Reviewers. We've got four choices that just scream quality Father's Day antic movies. And
we have Robin Williams and Billy Crystal's Father's Day, which I remember seeing way back when. We have Father of the Bride, and with Steve Martin.
Which one? Okay, so the redo, because there
I would go with the redo as that one. The third one would be Grown Ups, because we want to see that Rob Schneider and his relationship with his daughters in this movie, and how they so it's very fatherly in that one as well. and then our fourth one, which I think, what was the fourth one we did? I said we had to watch it, and
well, not that we want to influence the voting, and we should promote fair elections. But if you people don't put Mr. Mom over the top,
that's right, Michael Keaton.
there's something wrong with your movie viewing habits. So you know, those are the four for you to choose from this week.
I watch Mr. Mom about four times a year, about once a quarter. I'll throw him in there just because this was Michael Keaton's best role. This one and the one where he was a recovering alcoholic. And
Clean and Sober.
Clean and Sober, great movie.
A great movie.
Great movie. Dream Team was good too, where he played the nutbag. But to me, and even though we have a connection here, here's another connect the dots. We just talked about Christian Bale, who plays Batman.
That's right.
Who is our original Batman for us?
Original Batman was Michael Keaton.
Excellent.
Who did a fine role
in
that movie for me.
I think he played the best Batman out of all of them. I was never a big fan of Ben Affleck. Christian Bale did a good job. But I think you can't compare Tim Burton's Batmans with the Batmans of today. So going
different franchises all together.
Yeah. So
different franchises all together. So please give us an excuse to watch Mr. Mom again.
Or we'll review it anyways.
Exactly. We may have no choice but to do four movies next week if y'all can't do it over the top. So as we say goodbye to Bradley Cooper and we say goodbye to dancing movies of any decade, and we say hello to dads as we celebrate our day next Sunday, we want to thank all of you for tuning in and listening. We are Two Real Reviewers.
See you next week.